Welcome back to Behind the Play, and we're here with someone that I got to somehow work side by side all across the world in Indonesia, the one and only Arash Madani, who does amazing work for Sportsnet, and it's kind of cool. I think this is the first time we've really podcasted since that. It's almost like a year to the date when we were in
About
Jakarta,
that. Yeah.
the Canadian men's team. So you've been doing some fun stuff, covering the Olympics, and just a man of a world traveler with Sportsnet. Maybe talk about a day in the life of Arash in Paris last month, covering the
Oof.
Olympics. Was every day very different? I feel like every day was its own novel for you.
Yeah, every day was different, and yet every day was the same. Like, there was very little sleep and very little quality sleep because the gig I kind of decided for myself was I'm just going to go chase Canadian medals and Canadian stories. And so one of the challenges when an Olympics is in a place like Paris is, okay, well, you're in the European time zone, so the event is happening in that time zone, and yet everybody back here is still living in the Eastern time zone. So your 12-hour days actually become 16, 18-hour days because of all of that. And from the jump, Alex, it was a complete shit show because the morons at Canada Soccer decided they were going to have drones spy on New Zealand practices. So that just took on a life of its own. And they're firing Bev Priestman at whatever, or sending, I shouldn't say fire, sending Bev Priestman home at announcing that at 2 or 2:30 in the morning local time. So it's a lot of adrenaline, it's a lot of caffeine, it's a lot of kind of head on a swivel. But then you get to like some pretty cool moments and you're like, this is worth it, man. Like, seeing Maude Charron lift a bunch of weights and seeing the 4x1 relay team win gold and on and on and on. Pretty damn cool.
I know you always talk about how lucky you are, but are there pinch me moments that you think about with this Olympics that kind of spring to mind from the 2 3 weeks that you were there in Paris?
Yeah, the night of the 4x1 was incredible. Like that was like a lifetime highlight for me because when I was 7, 8 years old, I worshipped Ben Johnson and I hated Carl Lewis, and like I was obsessed with that whole rivalry and the 100 meters and then Donovan Bailey in Atlanta. I still remember being in my uncle's kitchen watching that 4x1 and how great the 4x1 was then. And over the years, I always tell my buddies, I'm like, one of the coolest events that you can watch live in person in a stadium is the 4x100 meter relay at an Olympics because it's not even a minute long. You've never heard 80,000 people be so quiet before the gun and then just explode afterwards. And then it's chaos. Then it's human bumper cars. Then it's everything that possibly could go wrong might. And the two previous ones that I'd done, London 2012 and Rio 2016, I mean, the anchor leg was a video game. Usain Bolt's not human. Like, everybody's pretty much getting the baton even. And then Bolt just, it was basically backpedaling his way while waving and laughing at everyone. And so this one rolls around, and DeGrasse had a bad hamstring, and he'd been crap all week. And Aaron Brown false started, and he hadn't got, like, nobody had gotten to a final in the 100 or the 200. And out of nowhere, magic happened. Like Andre in that far outside lane, you're just waiting for him to wilt, and he didn't. And watching them celebrate, and then they come through the mix zone, and they were so happy. And then, like an hour and a half later, I made sure I was out there to watch the medal ceremony and listen to the anthem. And that was, oh man, that's as good as it gets if you're a Canadian who likes sports.
Do you feel like your trust in your own judgment worked out? Because I was reading or listening to somewhere that you almost went to the volleyball but decided to stay for the 4x100, not even for the 4x100, but for the shot put, and just maybe
Yeah.
that kind of the craziness of your journalism endeavors.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, you have to make a choice. Where are you going to go? Because getting around in Paris was a disaster. And Like, here's the thing, Alex. Part of the reason why the 4x1 was so great is how out of nowhere it was. But at no point until there were 30 meters to go. And like when I say at no point, like I think that was a Friday.
Yeah,
I think it was
afternoon, I think,
Friday.
here. Yeah.
So Friday night there. So Thursday night, we're taking our marathon taxi back to the hotel and sitting there with camera guy Hugo Regenball in the back seat. And I'm like, what do we do tomorrow? And the thing was, we had gone to Liverpool, Nova Scotia in the lead up in like June or something, and met Sarah Mitten's mom, who had not seen Sarah compete since high school in person, and did this big feature. And I'm just like, Hugo, we got to see Sarah's story through. The number one shopper in the world, her biggest rival, had bombed out in qualifying. And I'm like, I really want to go to beach volleyball under the lights, and it's going to be a spectacle and whatever. I'm like, we just got to be there because this is probably going to happen. And then I looked at the schedule. I'm like, okay, well, the 4x100, like I think Sarah started 7:30 and the 4x1 was at like 7:45. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll be there for that too. And then suddenly Jerome Blake runs 8:98 on the backstretch, and the handoff from Rodney to DeGrasse was clean, and Andre High needed home at 8:89. I felt for Sarah, man. I felt for Bonnie, her mom. I felt for Tammy Gaudette. Sarah's basically her high school coach. They were sitting front row center, in section N, row one. I went down to see them before. But yeah, you kind of like have to make a decision, and sometimes you're there for A and then B happens. And when you're there for B and when it's something like that, you're like, wow, that's amazing.
Is it almost like at the Olympics with so many, especially, Canada got the most ever medals they'd had at a non-boycotted Olympics, that you're on your Twitter timeline, your head's on a swivel all the time because anything can happen, right? Like the obviously you talked about the shot putter not getting the gold medal and not getting a medal and bowing out, but then the 4x100, like what's that like for you, kind of behind the scenes, kind of trying to figure it out all out and trying to report on it as best as you can.
That's all you can do, the best as you can. You're trying to follow what the story is going to be. And sometimes the story isn't necessarily who medals. Sometimes the story is who's supposed to medal and doesn't. That becomes a story too. You know, as much as we were following Summer McIntosh, Maggie McNeil had a 100 meter butterfly gold medal to defend. And nobody has ever defended a 100 meter butterfly gold medal at an Olympics. And you found out again why at these. We flew to Marseille for the Canada soccer quarterfinal against Germany. But while early second half, maybe I flip open the laptop and we watch Josh Liendo win silver and Ilya Caron win bronze in the 100 meter men's butterfly. So you're just kind of following everything, keeping an eye on the boxing. We thought tomorrow Thibaut was going to win gold. Oh, someone's
Kind of with that, like obviously, the 4x100 relay was one of the moments that Canadians will remember forever, but you alluded to it with Summer McIntosh. And I the thing that I always thought about when she was winning and just with your coverage was how she was smiling when she won the medley. And I just kept thinking about that, how what a great quote, what a great job you did there to get that out of her. But how cool was it just to see that excellence from a 17-year-old who was just so poised and grabbing, Canadians' hearts, by the minute, by the medal.
Yeah. And there was so much pressure on her and like within swimming circles to like live up to the hype. And she did. She opens it by winning the 400 meter freestyle silver medal. And she tells Devin from CBC, she's like, we're just getting started. And you're like, whoa, okay, 17 year old Summer. And the next event's the 400 meter IM, and she wins by almost 5 seconds. Like, think about this, Alex. You're in the Olympic final of an event, the 400. Okay, so you touch the wall. 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004. And that's when the next person touches the wall.
Crazy.
That's nuts. She comes from behind. She was trailing by, what was it, in the 200? She's behind by a meter and a half, coming home in the final 25 meters, and she gets it. This kid's it. Like, it's the next great Canadian superstar, regardless of sport. Like, she's in the conversation with McDavid and with Shea and with, I don't know who else.
Joey Votto.
I was gonna say Romano, but he hasn't had a season. But like, that's what we're talking about here.
And do you think, like, do you with Penny Oleksiak, obviously she was kind of the golden child of Canadian swimming, and it's not that she's fallen off the map, but she didn't get any medals at the this Olympics. She's still relatively young. Do you think this is sustainable? Do you believe in, as you said, in all the hype, that this is not something? Obviously, I'm not expecting you to be Nostradamus, but do you feel that it's maybe something where she can pick up,
If
maybe?
she wants to, I think, like, at this point it's up to her. Like, 4 years is a long time.
Long, long time.
And also, like, do you want to keep doing this? Is this something that Are you going to stay motivated for 4 more years to do this all the time? Here's the thing, Alex. Their lives suck for 4 years, give or take 20 days. Now, there's going to be some financial incentive in here for summer. There's going to be a lot of corporate Canada coming her way, et cetera, et cetera. But I think at this stage, I mean, already she's got a bunch of partners, but I think at this stage, it's really up to summer in terms of what she wants to do and where she wants to take her career.
Maybe bigger picture, just for you. I know how much you love the storytelling aspect of covering the games and getting to know the athletes ahead of time, like you mentioned going to Nova Scotia. Well, for you, what's maybe that allure as a journalist to dig into those stories, to share them with the world? Like, what do you love about that?
That all of these athletes are willing to do all of this to represent their country at an Olympics. We spend so much time, excuse me, like, part of the reason that, like, okay, let me just explain it to you this way. Like, Wyatt Sanford wins Canada's first boxing medal in 28 years. Wyatt is from Kennetcook, Nova Scotia, which is like 45 minutes from where I grew up. At last count, depending on what today's obituary said, the population of Kennetcook was 471 people. Now, at Findlay Park in Kennetcook, they built a makeshift stage and put up a screen, and people from all over Hants County, more than 1,000 people came for each of Wyatt's fights to why sat on lawn chairs and picnic chairs, and they're all in red and white. And he got $24,000 in funding last year. And his travel expenses were $13,000 last year. And he's invested like 8 or 9 years of his life into this. And after he wins the bronze medal, I say to him, like, Wyatt, like, 5 years ago, you were fighting at the East Hand Sportsplex. And now here you are at the Olympic Games in Paris, and you're going to be on the podium. And he said, I know this might surprise you. He said, I'd rather fight the East Hand Sportsplex because those are my people. Those are the people who supported me. Without those people there, that I'm not here. It was such a great time, like, competing in front of them. And Alex, you've been around long enough. You don't hear that in NHL locker rooms. You
Oh,
don't hear
no, you
that in
don't.
Major League Baseball locker rooms. You don't hear that in NBA or NFL locker rooms. So, the appreciation I have, Maud Charron, the weightlifter, talked about how her silver medal in Paris meant more to her than her gold, because when she went to Tokyo, nobody was there. It was the COVID games. And she's like, my support system, my gang, they weren't there. And she said, I heard them all before I went out to compete in Paris. And she's like, game on. Yeah, I just think that shit's just so fucking great. And so I feel that if I have a platform, if I work for a network that's broadcasting these games, that I have an obligation to tell these stories, because think of everything they've done. The least I can do is do the little that I can for them.
And I was lucky enough to see you behind the scenes when we were in Jakarta, and all the work you do to make a TV hit, and to kind of what was the term you said, make the sausage, or how to make a sausage or whatever.
Yeah. Make
And
chicken salad out of chicken shit. Yeah.
yeah, there you go, there you go. maybe kind of, I was watching your recap of the Olympics, which I thought was just, you tied everything onto, into a bow with, going from the 4x100 to Summer McIntosh, to the soccer team, to, Wyatt Sanford, to, everyone within 6 7 minutes. And I'm curious, like, what is that behind the scenes look like for you? Or maybe just express it, because I've seen it a little bit. But how much work goes into that, and how much is, do you feel almost like a writer in a sense when you're making those pieces, as much as you are, on TV in a sense?
I'll be honest, that's one of the easiest things to do because I've been so invested in the project for so long. Like, I just kind of thought back to all the places we'd been, all the things that stood out, all the moments that kind of hit you, good, bad, indifferent. And what were the Canadian stories of these Olympics? Like, as great as summer was, as wonderful as the 4x1 was, the soccer story was right there. Damian Warner falling apart as the defending Olympic champion, the decathlon. Like, life is not a Disney movie, you know?
What you said.
So you really kind of dig in and think about it. And then I got to give a shout out to my colleague, Danielle Michaud. Danielle's a An
She's
Olympic
great.
junkie too. I sent her my script and I'm like, yo, what am I missing? And she reminded me of the rugby sevens, which I had totally forgotten about because it was like the first few days of the Olympic. And she gave me another one that I'd forgotten too. So you just want to make sure you're hitting the right notes. And it's not just about the medals, like talking about every medal. It's talking about the story within the story. And I just think that Canadian sports fans, people who follow the Olympics, like for 17, 18 days, they're on this magic carpet ride, and then they forget about it and move on with their lives and whatever. So let's just kind of put one final brush stroke on it. And something I really enjoy doing too.
You mentioned the women's soccer team, and I feel like we should, you could probably have hours and hours of podcasting on what happened there. But just being on the ground and being around the team a little bit, just, I don't know, how do you put what happened into perspective with this program, with winning a gold medal that might be tainted a little bit now, and the players adamantly saying that they didn't know about the drone scandal, and the staff cheating, but also, it's hard to, like, I guess just my question is, what was it like to be on the ground and around the team when all of this was going down?
So it was nuts. We didn't get there until their final round robin game, following it from afar. Here's the thing: the team wasn't in Paris. They were in Saint-Étienne for the first two matches. Then they went to Nice in the south of France. And then when they won that one, who was that, against Colombia or something? And
Columbia.
Then they went to Marseille. So in between Nice and Marseille, we came back to Paris for a few days, and we went in to Marseille for the day of the match. My biggest takeaway of the whole thing was, like, just how in limbo the players felt they were through the entire thing. They were talking about how they weren't eating, they weren't sleeping, that every day felt like more of a doomsday scenario, and they just weren't, there was no beginning, middle, and end to it all. First two coaches got sent home, then came the FIFA sanctions, then came the appeal, the Bev's sent home in between all that. Like, they just didn't know what was going to happen next. And they just try to rally around each other. without any kind of clue as to how this would go. Like they could have beaten Germany,
They
and
probably
Germany could have beaten them
yeah.
before penalties. It was an even match that gets decided really heads or tails in penalties. So yeah. It's amazing how Canada soccer is always in the middle of these things, isn't it?
It never ceases. Do you feel like it's changing, you know, like with the Copa America and, you know, that success and Jesse Marsh, you know, or
I don't
does
know.
you have no clue? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if we were having this conversation on the day after Copa, you'd have said, okay, well, they're the defending gold medalists on the women's side and the Copa thing and blah, blah, blah. Like, I've worked for two different CFL teams. I've worked in media for, I don't know, 15 years or something. I think the biggest takeaway of all this is what I always had to remind myself. When you work for a team and when you don't work for a team, like there's no such thing as an insider. Okay. We only hear or know of like 10% of the things that go on behind closed doors. So, okay, an insider is going to report on a trade, you know, 30 minutes before it happens, but who really knows what goes on behind closed doors? Like, why? Like the Brandon Ayuk situation, for instance, goes so far beyond money. It has to. It has to. And so whenever I go into a situation like this, I try and think about, okay, like what could the scenarios be that we don't know? And try and connect some dots that aren't there and try and piece together what a coach or what a player or what a staff member is actually saying here. And if you can become friends with the equipment guy or the equipment staff,
Yes.
it'll go a long way. But yeah. So I don't know. The answer is I don't know what's going on with something.
Do you think there will be a bit of, you know, in 5, 10, 15, 20 years when we look back at maybe not at this Olympics, but 2020, that there will be a bit of, you know, a long-lasting taint on that gold medal for the women's team? Or do you think, you know, it'll always be there? I'm not saying no one will ever think about it, but how much do you think that will come into play in how we remember it?
Zero. I think it's going to be zero unless they strip them of the gold medal. Because it's almost like people talk about, oh, is there an asterisk on this lockout shortened season? Or is there an asterisk on... No, nobody remembers. Everybody forgets. You're just there. You're a champion or you're not. When people talk about Tom Brady, is there an asterisk or is there a taint around Tom Brady?
It's all Belichick. It's all Belichick, Arash. Except the last one.
I got it.
Yeah, I get what you mean in terms of it. Well, I guess we'll cede it to history on that one. But I want to kind of wrap up with you know, another Canadian program that's always been mired in struggles, and we covered them in Jakarta, and obviously you did in the Philippines, and obviously in Paris slash Lille as well. But the Canadian men's and women's team had pretty disappointing Olympics in different ways. I guess for you, was this the opportunity, specifically on the men's side, where they really had this pathway to get a medal, to succeed, to you know, reclaim some of the demons that you know, Steve Nash and co had from 2000 against France as well? Was this kind of their biggest and best chance to get a medal, or do you think, you know, the future is still bright moving forward?
I mean, it is. You just don't know how this is all going to play out. Like in 2028, where are they with injuries? Where are they with contracts? Where are they with commitments? Where are they with size? Blah, blah, blah. They should be better. They should be good. They should contend for a medal. They should have contended for a medal this year. The first half no-show was just so bad. 10 first quarter points. They were shook, man. That place was rocking for 30 minutes before the game. Allez, les bleus. Like it was actually shaking in that, and I think that affected the whistle, but I don't think the whistle affected the end result. I know everybody's kind of pointing at that, and I'm like, okay, well, the whistle isn't why the team scored 10 points in the first quarter. The whistle isn't why They began the game shooting 3 of 15 from triples. The whistle isn't why Canada missed free throws when they got it within five. I thought Shea had a good line. He said, for the most part, we understood the assignment, just not today. It was a complete, utter meltdown. It was bad. It was poor. It was embarrassing. It was all those things. And you're just saying to yourself, man, how does that happen? Because the pathway was there to the gold medal
It
match.
was.
Serbia's on the other side. US is on the other side. It's there. And all those guys talked about. And here's the thing, Wemby was a non-factor in that game. That's the other thing. All that talk about how Wembanyama is going to be the difference maker. So as horrible as the women's soccer thing was, as shocking and disappointing as the Damian Warner thing was, to me, the worst, the most brutal part of the Olympics. And now, like, I'm not one to bash amateur athletes. These are grown-ass men. These are pros, and these guys blew it. And that was bad.
Yeah, I just everything that could go wrong went wrong, and it feels like you think about Venezuela 2015, the Czech Republic 2021 with that program, and same with the women, to be fair. Like, they had a really disappointing tournament, and
But
I mean,
not surprising.
no, that one
Right?
was
Like,
much
think
more.
about the trajectory of the women's program. 2012, happy to be there. They finally qualified. Great. 2016, they really blew it in Rio.
They did.
Tokyo
A
was
mess.
horrible. And here they scored 2 points in a quarter. Like I don't know what's wrong with that whole thing. Like there's a lot of soul searching that's going to have to go on for Canada basketball. And just talking to some people around it, I think it's going to happen. But when you start to look inward, like I don't know. Like they've changed the coach. I don't know. It might be a full youth coming on the women's side.
The one saving grace maybe for Canada basketball going forward is the Raptors aren't going anywhere, and there's going to be a WNBA team, and I think that will change a lot, especially on the women's side, hopefully, with the Caitlin Clark phenomenon and just women's sport. I think the having a WNBA team, we won't really see the byproduct of that for years to come, but I think Canada basketball is in good shape moving forward. But what where are they? Because the rest of the world is catching up, right? You look at men's basketball, which I do love that the US I don't think is probably going to win in LA at this point. You never know, but it doesn't feel the same way as in past years. And the women's team honestly could have easily lost to France as well in that final. They were a foot on the
You know, it's
line.
amazing how it goes, Alex. When push came to shove and the US needed to do something, LeBron and Steph and KD just said, okay, we got this. Everybody else, get the fuck out of the way. You can talk about youth and you can talk about this and that. In the end, it's the OGs who've been through it, who've done it. LeBron on Jokic. KD being KD and Steph just putting on a show for the ages. I think the guy who took the most out of that entire thing was Anthony Edwards on team. So he's like, ah, so this is what it's all about. This is what it takes.
Did you see him always tied at the hip with KD the whole time?
Yeah. And
Yeah.
then he was up on stage with Jalen Rose. Some kind of show a few days later. Yeah.
Yeah, talking about I didn't play in the he said something like I didn't play in the fourth quarter, so I can't talk about our comeback or something like that. But Arash, I guess just moving forward, and my last question is we've in Paris, we had 27 medals, the most ever. Are we becoming almost an Olympic, maybe not powerhouse, but an Olympic nation where we expect to do well consistently at these Olympics, and there's some sort of expectations, and it doesn't feel like every gold medalist or isn't a surprise, or like it really felt like that as a child, like in London. I think we had one gold medal in
Josie
trampolining.
McLennan,
Yeah,
yeah.
I know exactly. And you're like, oh my God, but it felt like every medal was getting over the hump, and at this Olympics, it felt like there was a bit of that. Okay, they might have had a medal in almost every day except like two or three, right? So it was a I guess I'm going on a tangent here, but do you think those are going to be the expectations moving forward and almost, or do you think it's still going to be what it has been for
Guess
the.
my question is the expectations on whom? Is it
That's
on
a.
the federations that don't get a ton of funding? Is it on the athletes who have to pay out of pocket? Like, I'm listening to Eleanor Harvey talk to Heather Hiscox at CBC. Eleanor wins Canada's first fencing medal. And Eleanor just like basically just talking like in the same tone I am here. She's like, yeah, you know, fencing's really expensive and the equipment's really expensive and the travel's real expensive. And then we ran out of money, so my mom sold the house and we moved into my grandmother's apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, and my grandmother slept on the couch so I could sleep in the bed so I'd be rested for training. What? Like, what are we doing as a country? Like, where are our priorities here with these athletes? And then why, how are we putting expectations on these people? You know, and they're like, okay, well, there's corporate money and there's corporate funding out there. Cool. Yeah. 30, 40 athletes out of the 338 Team Canada contingent get a little bit of money from a few corporate partners. That's it. So I just think that as a country, if we like the LA Olympics may as well be a Canadian Olympics. Like they're a North American Olympics, they're in this time zone. All eyes are going to be there. I know we did the Own the Podium for Vancouver and what a success it was. Can we make this happen? I don't know, but let's see how it all shakes down.
Well, on that optimistic note, I'm going to ask you about the Vikings. No, I'm kidding. But Arash, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. You know, you've been such a great mentor to me and so good with me, you know, throughout my journalism journey, I guess is the right way to describe it. So I always appreciate you coming on, and you're one of, I think you're my third guest on this show. So it's always cool that you know, come back, reconvene, have some fun. Yeah, I guess, you know, the floor is yours. Is there anything kind of coming up in the ether that people should stay tuned for? I know you've finally got some rest as well from your
Yes.
Olympic odyssey, but anything you kind of want to plug or anything coming up that you want to share other than the Vikings, you know, do you feel confident about this season for the Vikings? No. JJ
No.
McCarthy just ruined it for you.
Yeah, that and just the roster is not very good. No, I would just nothing personally for me. I just wish that our country took amateur sport more seriously. And Olympic sports and Olympic athletes more seriously. We all care for the 18 days every 2 years. Sure. But I just think that if anybody from the public or private sector pick some of these kids, pick some of these athletes to invest in because the payoff is awesome and their message is awesome and it's worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Arash. I will be contacting Justin Trudeau here in Ottawa to get some funding for all the athletes. But thanks again for taking the time and doing this. And let's do this again in a couple, maybe every Olympic cycle. I need to have you on or something like that. But thanks so much again for taking the time and doing this.
All right, dude. Good to see you.